Bracing for a standoff in cold and wet North Dakota. Hundreds of Native Americans and environmental activists have staked out at a campsite in Cannonball, North Dakota for months, protesting the construction of the Dakota Access Pipeline. Wednesday afternoon is the deadline set by North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum and the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers for them to clear out.
If Barclays were able to feel emotions as an institution, would it be more nervous or excited about President Trump?
You know, I think we are very encouraged by the trajectory of the U.S. economy. Clearly, the markets are. We're encouraged by the trajectory there and very much like our footprint there.
The U.S. telco giant Verizon has done some superb haggling, reaching a deal with Yahoo to buy its internet business for almost $500 million less than originally agreed. Following the $450 million price cut, Verizon says it's now buying the Yahoo business for around $5.8 billion. Under the new deal, Yahoo and Verizon will split the cost of some lawsuits arising from the data breaches.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Thursday. It's February 23rd, 2017, 5:10 in the morning. Glad to have you along for another episode of The Opening Bell and another business day as we coast to Friday. Lots to talk about on the program later in the show. We're going to talk with Jane O'Donnell from the USA Today. She's the healthcare reporter there. Yesterday, there was a new patient group formed focusing on drug prices. We'll tell you what that's all about and how it might mean lower price drugs for you and your family. And still ahead, our thought leader discussion today. We'll speak with John Horton of Associated Bank about yesterday's housing numbers. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank market desk this morning, Dow futures are pointing toward a positive open later on Wall Street, up about 11 points right now. NASDAQ and S&P futures are flat. Crude oil is trading at about $54.30 a barrel. Gold and silver are a little bit higher. European markets are mixed this morning in FTSE. The FTSE in London is off, and so is the DAX in Germany. The CAC in France is up this morning. Some of the other notes from world markets generally near their record highs this morning as the dollar eked out just minimal gains after minutes of the latest Federal Reserve meeting showed policymakers are in no big hurry to raise interest rates, although they indicated that March might be the time they do the first one this year. U.S. and Eurozone government bonds held steady this morning as the minutes did nothing really to firm up expectations of a rate rise in March. That remains a slim prospect now, with the futures pricing in only an 18% chance of a rate hike in March. Japan's Nikkei closed fractionally lower. Banks fell. Australian shares down almost a 0.5%. Some news from overnight and late yesterday when a summer thunderstorm knocked out power to Scott Pruitt's home 3 years ago. The then Attorney General of Oklahoma reached out to a lobbyist for American Electric Power. Pruitt's executive assistant emailed Howard Ground saying General Pruitt wanted to know when his lights would be back on. The utility lobbyist asked for Pruitt's address. A work crew arrived, and it was taken care of within a matter of hours. It is just one of several emails released yesterday to the Associated Press and the New York Times that underscores a cozy relationship between the new head of the Environmental Protection Agency and those that profit from burning fossil fuels, the oil and gas companies and energy companies. General Motors is trying to persuade state lawmakers to approve self-driving cars that would benefit the automaker while potentially keeping its competitors off the road. The carmaker denies it's trying to freeze out other brands, but legislators in four states say GM lobbyists have asked them to sponsor bills that the company's competitors contend would do just that. Yesterday, we saw some really nice housing numbers. The National Association of Realtors says home sales rose 3.3% in last months from December to a seasonally adjusted rate of about 5.5 million. Steady job gains, modest pay raises, rising consumer confidence, all spurring a healthy home buying market. Buyers are snapping up homes with typical homes on the market for just 50 days. We thought we would talk a little bit about this today in our thought leader conversation. And John Horton is here. He's from Associated Bank. He's the vice president and senior lending manager at Associated Bank, specializing in construction loans, jumbo mortgages, refinancing. He brings to our thought leader conversation 27 years of residential mortgage business. John, good morning. Welcome back to The Opening Bell.
Thank you, Steve. Glad to be back.
You maybe can help straighten something out for us, because we're seeing a couple of these different reports today that are a little confusing. One of them says this could be the worst housing market in the nation in 2017 in Chicago. But yet we see the report from the Realtors today saying, hey, January was a pretty good month.
Yeah, kind of referencing that article you talked about in December. I was looking at it last night, and the words that kind of stuck out were gloomy, dead last, anemic, and pessimistic. And that was going to lead to poor performance due to high unemployment and low income growth. And I think a lot of it was the pent-up demand, people waiting. The election is over. What's going to happen? You've now had a full 30-day cycle. Rates did increase, but they also came down. You really don't hear the good news a lot. The rates kind of peaked at about 4 3/8. I look at the 30-year as a good barometer. It went up to about 4 3/8 through end of November, beginning of December. Right now it's around 4 1/8, 4 1/4, obviously depending on credit and everything else. But what you're also seeing is those people with the home sales, not a lot on the market. So the people that do have that inventory out there, you're starting to see some things move. And the weather is a great factor. You're not going to go to an open house if it's muddy and slushy. If the sun's out, it really makes a big difference on the home sales.
Yeah, and practically flowers coming up in Chicago.
Oh, absolutely.
We've seen such nice weather. But I love how, like a newspaper editor, you have that article circled with all the negatives on it.
Yeah.
This has to be a positive, though, as we hear the Realtors group saying home prices and home sales ticked up in January. Chicago and Illinois saw some of the biggest in the country. Is it that maybe we might see a good beginning of the year and a bad end of the year? Is that how we kind of reconcile these two?
You know, I think what you're seeing is a lot of positive things came into play all at once. It wasn't just the housing market. You saw the stock market go up. All the different sectors were starting to go up. There were steady job gains. There were modest pay increases. The rising consumer confidence. So once you see that the healthy income and the healthy economy start to move, it's like a train. Once it gets going, people kind of jump on. As far as will it die down, I was looking this morning at our numbers for my team over at Associated Bank, and we're almost dollar for dollar, 2016 to 2017. And actually, over at the NBA conference, the NBA CEO David Stevens had said that Fannie and Freddie are saying 2017 will be as robust, if not better, than 2016. But that goes back to the article in December. That can change in a month.
Yeah, it's, at least it's positive, though.
Right,
it's
absolutely. Really good. There's a lot of positive stuff out there.
So I'm also interested in your take, John, on the demographics of who's out buying right now and getting mortgages. We saw this one report that said that a third of them, at least in Chicago, were single, young single people.
Yeah, there's a lot of young single people that are out there that are taking advantage of the market. School systems are huge. People that are single that may not even have a glimmer in their eye of having children are also looking, which they should be, into the school system. It's a great buying point. And you always say when you buy a house, you should think about selling it, even though you may never sell it. But when you sell it, if you're in a poor school system, it's going to be on that market even longer. Right now, the average market time for a house is right around 50 days. If it's priced right and in a good area, 50 days is outstanding, absolutely outstanding.
I saw a report, too, that sort of poo-pooing the idea that you can be single and be a home buyer. I'm one of those people, and I know a lot of others that are like that. Is that sort of a misconception about buying a home, that you have to be married?
No, not at all. If you're looking at the average rent in the city of Chicago is $1,800 to $2,300, again, depending on the area, but right around that price point. If you boil that down to what your mortgage payment would be, give you a rough idea, on a 30-year fixed at 4 1/4, a $200,000 mortgage, your principal and interest would be $984. Now, obviously, you want to add on your taxes, your insurance, homeowners association, but $984 for $200,000, or to break it down even simpler, it's $492,000 for every $100,000 you finance. So a lot of people like the apartment living. If they don't want the commitment, they don't want to be tied down. Maybe they're in a profession that has them moving around. But if you're in and you're set for $1,000 a month for a $200,000 mortgage, it beats the rent, and then you get the tax write-off, most likely.
Yeah, I actually know a couple of people who hate me because my mortgage is cheaper than their rent.
Oh, absolutely.
And, but they've also, the good thing for you is they've decided this is the year that they're going
to
buy a house.
Right, time to go.
So what do people need to be thinking about if that's going to be their plan, if they've now come into their head that that's what they're going to do this year? What do they need to be doing right now?
They got to understand it's not your grandmother's mortgage. You know, it's not the handshake deals anymore. It's not that I know John over at Associated Bank and I'm going to close on Tuesday and today's Monday. Being prepared and being educated, just like anything else, having a relationship with a lender, finding a quality realtor, finding a quality real estate attorney, not that the Yellow Pages exist anymore, and I'm not 90, but don't look in the Yellow Pages. Refer. Call your realtor. Call your attorney. Call your lender, and just ask them who they deal with. You know, it's the best way to do it. It's a team. You know, it shouldn't be three separate individuals. It should be a team that go together. Meet with your lender. Get pre-approved. Pre-approved is key. One of the biggest discrepancies is people think a pre-qualification and a pre-approval is the same. A pre-approval is you calling me saying, John, this is what I make. This is my debt. And I say, great, Steve, here's your mortgage payment you can afford. Well, then I pull your credit. You give me a pay stub, and you're a liar, and now you can't afford what I told you. The pre-approval is you coming in with bank statements, pay stubs, and tax returns, completely fully underwritten with a solid commitment. You're not committed to anything because there's no property address, but at least it gives you something when you go to that realtor and say, hey, I talked to John at Associated. Here's what I can afford. They know that you've been vetted by underwriting, and if the appraisal comes out, title comes out, home inspection comes out, you'll be good to go.
And if it's the opposite side of that, the gorilla paw comes in and pulls me out of the office because I have some kind of problem, there's time to fix those kinds of things. And if that's you, you would give them advice on doing what to make sure they come
in. I'll tell you, that's some of my favorite stories. And I've been doing this 25 years. It's some of my favorite stories of people that really want that home ownership dream. They know that they may have a year. We have a product called a credit builder over at Associated. It's exactly what it says. It builds your credit. So if you think you can do it, but you're not really sure, sitting down talking to someone is the only way to do it. Better than coming in being disappointed when you're on the hook. Come in, work with people, have that relationship. It all comes back to the basics. Have the relationship with someone you trust that can help you if you're not ready to go. And if you're ready to go, can kind of expedite it for you.
I like that idea of the credit builder. If you had to give somebody a piece of advice right now in building credit, what would it be? The number one thing that you could do to improve your credit?
Pay your bills, number one. But number two, a lot of people don't have credit. A lot of these younger people paid cash for everything, which is great until you go to get a mortgage. You need at least four trade lines, according to Fannie and Freddie, to qualify for a mortgage. What some people will do, they'll open up a credit card, get a gallon of gas, pay it off. Don't exceed your credit utilization by more than 30%. If you have a $1,000 credit card, if you exceed that by the most you want to charge on that is $333. Because what that does, it starts to affect your score. It's not going to kill it, but you want to keep it about a third of credit utilization. Don't close old credit cards. If you have a Marshall Fields credit card, so now you know how old I am. If you have a Marshall Fields credit card, keep it open. It's transferred to a different bank, but it's long credit. Outstanding long history of credit is good.
So this idea of closing credit cards because you don't use them anywhere, that's actually a real thing. It could be bad.
Well, it depends on how many you have. You know, we've seen people that have 10 credit cards out there all with $10,000 credit lines. It's $100,000 of available credit. They may not have used them, but if you use them and you pay them down, just kind of limit your credit cards.
We was talking recently to some millennials, one of them an entrepreneur who said the biggest mistake he had made in his life getting ready to own a business was not having credit cards. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine that somebody would be in their mid-20s or almost 30 and not ever have a credit card.
It's amazing. And it's certain cultures in certain areas that don't believe in credit. They want to pay cash for everything, which is wonderful. It's great for the economy. But again, even when you go to buy a car, you just want that history of credit, because if I'm going to lend you money, I want to see that you know how to pay people back.
You talked earlier about the schools being a big thing about when people go to a neighborhood and look for a. How do you at Associated Bank help with all of those things? Because it's probably more than schools. Do you have snapshots of neighborhoods ready to go where you send people? Or
absolutely. Matter of fact, before I got here this morning, I sent a note over to a realtor. Her mom and dad own a real estate company. They were talking about construction loans. And she has a buyer she just sent me when I was walking in this morning that was looking for a school system in a certain area. The nice thing about Associated Bank is with the branches here, we have a diverse group of people that probably live in any area, suburbs and city that you can think about. So if I don't know the area, I can find someone within the organization that does that'll be able to help us out.
We see the minutes of the Fed's last meeting. It looks like they're going to push for 3 rate increases this year, maybe the earliest coming in March. Those are pretty much fixed into the system already, aren't they?
They are baked in. And again, sometimes they talk about that so much. We talked last time. They talked about raising it for the last 6 years, 5 times last year. They never went up. So they are baked in. The closer it gets, you may see a little spike. But what happens is if they don't raise it, you're not going to see an immediate drop. So the banks don't like to be caught with their shorts down. They do like to be set. So if you call on Friday and they raise them on Tuesday, you should have a similar rate. But again, it depends on what else goes on in the economy. You could have them raise rates and a lot of other factors that deter from the economy that may bring them back down.
One of those other things going on in the economy is we saw the last housing starts report come out that they were lower. People are not pulling permits, not getting ready to build stuff. Would you like to see those numbers improve pretty quickly?
I'd like to see them improve, and I think what you're seeing now on the construction side, that's a major, major project. Not only getting your builder in line, finding the right parcel of land. A lot of people will take their existing homes and just do a major remodel. Construction lending is one of Associated Bank's premier products in the Chicago area. I think you'll see more as the weather is starting to stay the same. You're not seeing a lot of the snow, so I got to wait to build. Frost line is still kind of there, but it's not too bad. So I think you're going to see a spike in that fairly soon.
Even still, it seems like as I drive around the city, there's construction going on everywhere.
It's unbelievable. We were at a lunch actually last week with Mayor Emanuel, and he called the building cranes the new state bird. Because you're seeing it everywhere. And, we were talking about the apartment buildings. They were looking at 8,000 individual apartment units going up this year and next. So it's huge. It's a huge market right now.
And so what else is on your radar screen in terms of things that we need to be aware of? What are you hearing from people who are coming in? And what do you think might be a big prediction for the year?
I think it's the education. Really, all you hear is bad news. You rarely hear the good news. So my team, myself over at Associated Bank, getting involved in Chicago Association of Realtors, Main Street Association of Realtors, letting them know it's really not that bad anymore. People think, we talked about before, it was in an Illinois Association of Realtor article saying you need 20% down. You don't. FHA is 3.5%. VA is 100% financing, 5% on conventional. It's education is really going to drive it, letting the word out, letting them know what we do well, and it's the relationships and the education we have with the people we work with.
Yeah, and don't feel bad about calling somebody like John at Associated Bank. He'll be glad to take the call. Even if it's just a little education, you may not get a mortgage out of it, but it could be coming down the way.
Absolutely. Always remember the people that help you, like you, Steve.
Glad to help. Listen, I have a question for you because I saw this too. Do cookies in the oven when you're selling your house, is that still the tip over or is it vanilla, is the smell of vanilla?
It's funny you ask that. They actually have candles or those scented aroma that people will hide around their house.
Yeah.
It's a tough call. If you're allergic to cookies, you won't buy the house. But it is the smell. It brings back memories. It's a homey feeling. I will do my research for next time I'm here and let you know.
They even have those candles now that smell like the Mac computers, the Apple Mac computers. So just
they
any smell.
They smell like computers?
Yeah, the Apple Mac, yeah.
I didn't know computers smelled.
Yeah, I guess there's some kind of new car smell, the new computer
smell
that goes along with it.
Exactly.
John, it's good talking with you. We'll see you again next time.
I appreciate it. Thanks, Steve.
John Horton is the Vice President and Senior Lending Manager at Associated Bank. It's our thought leader conversation. Remember to follow Associated Bank at Associated Biz on Twitter. Listen to our past conversations at WGNradio.com on the opening bell page. And you know our thought leaders are talented and experienced. They're very smart. And they want to answer your questions. Send your questions via email to thoughtleader@wgnradio.com. That's thoughtleader@wgnradio.com. And we could answer your question on an upcoming episode of The Opening Bell.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program at 540, the business of healthcare. Now in our segment, the organization called Patients for Affordable Drugs has launched a campaign to highlight drug prices, highlighting stories, too, of Americans who are struggling to cover the cost of prescriptions, a cost that in many cases is rising. Reporter Jane O'Donnell covers healthcare policy for USA Today. She wrote about this yesterday. She joins us now live. Jane, good morning. Welcome to The Opening Bell.
Good morning. Nice to be here.
Glad to have you with us. This is a topic that probably affects most of our listeners, most people. What is this group about and what is its focus?
The focus is drug prices, and as I noted in the article, and frankly, I didn't realize until I've covered healthcare just three years, I was not aware until about a year ago how many of the patient groups, and when we say patient groups, it's the various groups that fight different types of cancer, or like the Leukemia Society, epilepsy, all these different groups, mental health, it's very big, are funded by the drug makers. And you know, it's amazing to it was amazing to me how closely what they would say paralleled what the drug makers are saying, and they never talked about drug prices. And drug prices is the biggest thing on many on most patients' minds, according to many studies, when it comes to healthcare.
And this group has shunned all of that money, I gather.
Yes, they're not taking it. They launched yesterday. That's brand new. And they are not going to take any money from anybody that makes money on the sale of drugs, you know, making drugs, no pharmacy benefit managers, which I would assume your listeners know, but a lot of us might not. Are the people that, you know, your drug benefit card, you know, it might be Caremark or Express Scripts. So David Mitchell, the man who started the group, has multiple myeloma, which happens to be, well, it's an incurable blood cancer, but it also happens to involve the drug that's the most expensive for Medicare patients, which is called Revlimid. And so that was one of the things that just kind of blew him away. I know from my conversations with him that he could afford his out-of-pocket because it wasn't very high, and he has the means to helping to start this group. But he couldn't believe that, and I couldn't believe, frankly, that when you look at, you know, the median annual income of a Medicare patient is $24,000 a year. The average median out of pocket is about $11,000 if you're on Revlimid per year. So that alone is one of the things that inspired him to start this group.
Sure, that's half of really all of his income. This couldn't have happened at a better time, I guess. Maybe it was timed that way. We've seen a lot of these stories in the news lately. One of the biggest recently was the EpiPen story with the skyrocketing prices of those. But you mentioned this cancer drug. There are AIDS drugs that also are really high up on their HIV drugs. Was this time to hit just at this point when we're debating all of this and also the future of the Affordable Care Act?
Yeah, I assume he was working on this for quite a few months. It's a very sophisticated campaign. The website, it's pfad.org, I believe. I need to double check that and make sure I'm saying the right name, but the right address. But they're collecting email addresses of people to help, you know, start kind of more of one of these. Change.org types of things. You know, it's a time when the drug companies are spending tens of millions of dollars to influence Congress on drug prices, and he felt that there was a need to have, you know, a true patient voice. You know, everybody, doctors, members of Congress, everybody has to say when you know who they're getting their money from in Washington, but these groups, a lot of them do not. Like if you go on their websites, you would not know that Pfizer and whatever other drug company is paying for 725, often 60-70% of their advocacy efforts. So he's fighting. He's trying to fight, you know, that influence, but also just what the drug companies are putting into advocacy right now. And it is such an important time.
Yeah, and he's got a fight there for his life. Obviously, that's a major fight. But this fight with all this money that's involved, you mentioned all of these different drug companies. What is his hope, and what is this group's hope of having success?
He's fairly optimistic, and I was amazed. I mean, I was really just calling. I mentioned another group in there called the National Health Council, and I've been fairly critical in stories about them because they had very what I would describe as squishy transparency requirements or recommendations for their members, and they would. But they have decided to, under pressure from the media and others, that they're going to require their members to be far more transparent. Like if you get, you know, $1 million to $10 million from Pfizer, I keep saying Pfizer because they're so well known. If you're doing that, you have to put that on your website, and it has to be the information has to be accessible on the homepage. So he's hoping to influence that, and he's hoping to influence drug price policy. You know, anybody, and certainly me too, and I'm sure you, if we had any type of serious disease, we would want innovation and all of the things that drug makers say that they, you know, they need to be able to focus on. But when you look at the raises, the economy and the kind of raises that people, certainly in my industry and other industries, might be getting, they just can't keep up with new drugs that cost $120,000 a year.
Are they reaching to lawmakers that are happy to hear this and eager to help? I know that there are a couple of bills that have already been introduced that would require some drug manufacturers to report price increases and sort of control some of the supplies and prices of drugs. Is this something that is heavily on the radar screen of lawmakers?
Yes, this issue, and it really has surprised me. And while a lot of the people that are advocating for something to be done about drug prices are heartened, were heartened by, you know, some of the comments President Trump made on the campaign trail. He did kind of change his tune a little after meeting with some of the drug makers. But this still does have a lot of momentum. The letters from the groups of senators and the group of House members were Democrats, but it was a very heated. The EpiPen hearings were just very heated and very bipartisan, and Republicans were, you know, calling those hearings. So I don't think this is quite the partisan issue that so many other things in this town that I live in, that is, you know, where everything is so partisan.
Yeah, and these real stories too, coming from people who are struggling to just survive, first of all with whatever health problem, and then when you hear the money that they're paying out, those have to have an impact as well.
Oh, yes, certainly. And, you know, an important point to make here, and again, it wasn't until I started getting into this more, that what you always hear these groups talk about is, oh, the out-of-pocket cost, it's the insurance companies. And certainly, you know, nobody really loves an insurance company, that's for sure. But you know, it isn't the reason the insurance companies and you know, large corporations that are self-insured are requiring patients to pay so much out-of-pocket is because these drug prices are just so high. So, I mean, it isn't just the insurance companies. It's not. It would always be about, oh, they're putting this drug on a very high tier, or the out-of-pocket is too high. It's a much more complicated issue, and at least this group really wants to put the spotlight on the drug prices, too, because nobody else seemed to be.
Jane O'Donnell is a reporter for USA Today. She covers healthcare policy for the paper. You can read her work at usatoday.com. Jane, thanks for being with us on the Opening Bell.
Sure, my pleasure. Thank you.
It's 5:49. By the way, you can reach out to Patients for Affordable Drugs. Their website is just that, patientsforaffordabledrugs.org. And you can put in your email there and sign up for news and be part of this organization that we've just talked. We'll also link to Jane's story on our Twitter account at WGNRadio.com.
You're listening to the Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. 5:53 as we check the Dow futures on the Associated Bank Market Desk, up 11 points this morning. S&P and NASDAQ futures a little higher as well. Time for a check on agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. As we look at today's activity in the marketplace, we have to look back at yesterday when South America again had an impact, particularly on the soybean market at the Board of Trade. Soybeans closing lower for a third straight session. Wheat futures fell. On the other hand, corn firmed up just a little bit. So at the end of the trading session yesterday, we saw March wheat down 4¾ cents at 4.36. March corn down 6 cents at 10.20, or soybeans down 6 cents at 10.26 and a quarter, and March corn up a penny and a half at 3.69 and a quarter. Some good news in the livestock complex again yesterday. The cattle market hit a four-week high on gains in the beef market. Cattle live futures up 1% to the highest prices in about 4 weeks. Feeder cattle futures followed live cattle higher at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. The February live cattle contract settled $1.17 higher in yesterday's trade. Weaker cash hog prices weighed on the lean hog contracts. Hogs were down 57 cents in the key Iowa Southern Minnesota market. So we had cattle higher, but hogs lower in yesterday's trade. Well, tomorrow, the USDA annual National Ag Outlook Forum gets underway in Washington, D.C., and it looks like we'll not hear from the Secretary of Agriculture. Latest word is that Sonny Perdue has not yet been appointed, and so he cannot make the traditional Secretary of Agriculture address at the National Ag Outlook Forum. Remember, it's National FFA Week. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuels.
Now the Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for this Thursday, February 23rd. The Labor Department releases jobless claims at 7:30 Chicago time. Freddie Mac, the mortgage company, has weekly mortgage rates. In Madrid, the Spanish energy company Repsol releases its financial results for the fourth quarter. Big day for retail earnings in this country. Gap, Kohl's, Nordstrom all report earnings as well. You remember that Nordstrom was in Donald Trump's crosshairs on Twitter after it dropped Ivanka Trump's clothing line. Company will report its latest quarter's earnings. The retail chain stock price climbed more than 7%, by the way, after that Twitter battle with Donald Trump.